It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up in just a bit, we'll talk to a reporter about the so-called dark money that was spent in support of Wisconsin's mining law.
First, Governor Scott Walker's record on environmental protection is one point of contention between Walker and his Democratic challenger, Mary Burke. As our series on next month's election continues, Chuck Kornbach looks at how green is this governor.
His Boy Scout days, that he would leave a campsite, meaning the environment, cleaner than he found it. It's a promise that some say is at odds with another Walker pledge to help create 250,000 jobs in the state.
More often than not, we just try to listen to our local leaders and follow along. We're glad the DNR and others were involved with that.
Last week in Germantown, Walker spoke at a ribbon cutting for a company's new distribution center. The building isn't yet ready to be occupied, but it's as far along as it is, partly because the Wisconsin DNR moved more quickly on a wetlands review for the site. The governor says faster reviews are part of a wetlands bill he signed 2 years ago.
It helped speed up the process so that when you've got projects like this, we still want to have wetlands, we still want to have good air, good land, clean water, but we want to do so in a timely fashion.
Democrats called the law the Flood Our Families Act, contending more building in wetlands will boost downstream flooding. It's hardly the only green-tinted controversy during the Walker years. Various groups and individuals are also upset with the governor over his handling of renewable energy, environmental enforcement, wolf hunting with dogs, frac sand mining, and then there's that proposed iron ore mine the GTAC Corporation wants to open near Hurley. At last Friday's debate, Democratic challenger Mary Burke said there was a link between GTAC money and a new mining law that critics say weakens protections for land and water.
What we have seen recently is that there was a secret $700,000 campaign contribution from an out-of-state corporation, and Governor Walker changed the rules so that we had that corporation strip mining in our North Woods.
Governor Walker has denied being influenced by campaign dollars and says the DNR is closely reviewing the still unbuilt mine. Burke declined an interview for this story, but her campaign sent a statement in which she promises to bring together all stakeholders to find the right balance between economic development and our public health and natural resources. Those are welcome words in part of the state troubled by contaminated runoff from big farms. Meshek Creek is a stream that flows through eastern Kewaunee County and into Lake Michigan. Family farm owner Lynn Utesh says the waterway often has elevated levels of bacteria due to liquid manure runoff. Utesh says part of the problem goes back to governors before Scott Walker, but Utesh says Walker hasn't done enough to reduce the pollution, and it's time to see what a Burke administration can do.
We know that what we're going to get if we get a re-election of Scott Walker. Mary Burke, I believe that the minimum we will at least get a new secretary of the DNR and a new secretary of the agriculture, which we could hope would be something better.
One group, the Wisconsin League of Conservation Voters, says it's spending $1 million to spread concerns about Walker's environmental record. The governor insists the campsite is cleaner.
We try to do our smart moves that both sustain the environmental standing that we have in the state, but do so in a way that makes us economically sustainable.
Chuck Kornbach, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Over the past few years, there have been plenty of ups and downs in the fight to build an iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin. The proposed mine has been the subject of protests, political fights, and a whole lot of spending from groups hoping to see the mine built.
But there hasn't been much information on where this money came from. According to a new ProPublica investigation, an accidentally released court filing reveals how one company secretly gave money to a nonprofit that helped get favorable mining legislation passed. The story offers a rare look at how money changes hands in a post-Citizens United era.
Joining us now is Theodoric Meyer, reporting fellow at ProPublica, who's been covering this story. Theo, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, that court filing we just mentioned made headlines briefly here in Wisconsin. What was in that court filing that's at the heart of the story you're telling?
It did. So this court filing sort of confirmed something that many lawmakers had suspected but had never been able to prove. A federal appeals court in Chicago posted this filing online for several hours, apparently mistakenly, before taking it down. And reporters at the AP and the Journal Sentinel and elsewhere got their hands on it before it was taken down from the website.
And this showed us where money was coming from for what we often call outside groups, not direct political campaigns or things like that. Why is this so rare that we see this sort of thing?
Yeah, buried deep in the document is a single paragraph saying that the mining company, Göbek Taconite, had given money directly to one of these outside groups, the Wisconsin Club for Growth.
And so who are the big players? Who is donating the money that we're talking about?
And you had asked why it was rare to see this thing. The Wisconsin Club for Growth is a social welfare nonprofit, which means that it is allowed to spend at least some of its money on politics and does not have to disclose its donors, unlike, say, a super PAC, which, plenty of those also spend lots of money in elections.
And this all comes in part from the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling. What's the line from there to here?
Yeah, Citizens United and, sort of related rulings around the same time allowed corporations as well as unions to spend sort of unlimited amounts on politics. So since Citizens United, came down in 2010, you've seen this huge surge in outside money, both by groups that disclose their donors, like super PACs, and nonprofits that don't have to disclose their donors.
Now, going back to the mining story in specific, we had this concept, this idea of having an iron mine in northern Wisconsin. There was work on rewriting Wisconsin's mining laws that would change the way these are regulated. There was a version of this law supported by the company involved. But what happened then when this got to the state Senate?
So the company had said about 6 months after it first announced that it wanted to build this mine, that new legislation was something that was pretty much necessary for them to build it. So I wanted to see sort of at what points these two nonprofit groups, the WMC and the Wisconsin Club for Growth, sort of entered the debate and the battle over the law along the, almost 2 years that were spent fighting over it.
So how did they do that? How did they get involved after a Senate vote shot down this mining plan?
Well, they got involved, actually, almost immediately after it became public that Göbek was working with lawmakers on this bill. The WMC had brochures ready to go way back in May 2011, before the bill had even really become public, and started running radio ads shortly thereafter. This group also played a hand in writing the bill along with the company.
And then lawmakers who spoke out or voted against this particular mining bill, what was the reaction from funders and from the groups you're talking about?
Well, a lot of this came down to needing sort of one more vote to get this through the state Senate. And a lot of pressure was put on Senator Dale Schultz, who is a Republican in the Senate, who was sort of undecided on whether or not to vote for the bill. Lobbyists who worked both for the company and for one of these groups visited him on several occasions. And the group that received money directly from the company, the Wisconsin Club for Growth, launched this robocalling campaign against him in which it urged voters around the state to call his office and tell Schultz to vote for the bill.
And how did you talk to Senator Schultz? How did he respond to that?
I spoke to Senator Schultz as well as some of his staffers, he sort of expressed concern, as he had before, that the bill didn't have enough environmental protections, and frustration that these groups, particularly the Wisconsin Club for Growth, were smearing him, and he didn't know where their money was coming from, as nobody did. One staffer told me that during a meeting with both lobbyists from the WMC and from the company, He told them that you could tell your buddies if they're making these phone calls in my district, they can keep doing them because they're making me a folk hero.
And you pointed out an anecdote I hadn't heard. I guess WMC, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, had given Senator Schultz an award, but changed their attitude toward him in the midst of this mining debate.
Yeah, they give out these awards every year called the Working for Wisconsin Awards, that any legislator who, you know, votes the way they sort of suggest a certain percentage of the time gets one of these awards. So since it's just done by percentage of votes, Schultz had voted with them during that session, I think 88% of the time. So he got one of these awards, even though, you know, the WMC was quite displeased with him when they gave it to him because he'd opposed this legislation. So, you know, a lot of people have sort of tried to, you know, paint him as a liberal. And on a lot of the votes that he took in that session, he was actually in line with their position.
And then in the elections that followed, you say that these groups and their funders targeted a key Democratic state senator. How did they do that?
True. So as I'm sure your listeners remember, the original mining bill failed in the spring of 2012. And so these groups sort of turned their attention towards influencing the 2012 elections and trying to flip the Senate to Republican control. So in particular, they poured a huge amount of money, almost $2 million, according to estimates, into this one particular race in Oshkosh, where State Senator Jessica King was running for re-election.
And she ultimately lost. And she, you talked to her, she blamed her loss in part on that spending.
Yeah, she spent less than $300,000 on her whole campaign. Her opponent spent only a little bit more. You know, together these groups poured in a huge amount of money and were able to buy, you know, a lot of TV ads in Green Bay that she credits with, you know, turning the race against her. She lost by only 600 votes out of more than 85,000 people who voted. So she lost very, very narrowly. And she thinks that if this money hadn't, you know, come in and funded these groups, that she might have won that race.
We're talking with ProPublica reporter Theo Meyer. He wrote a story about the secret money that went into crafting Wisconsin's mining law, and you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. We're talking with ProPublica reporting fellow Theo Meyer. In a recent story, he looked at what's been called dark money in political campaigns and what went into crafting Wisconsin's mining law. You can join in with your questions and your comments and your thoughts on the influence of money on political decision-making and on elections in the Citizens United world at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. So, Theo, this phrase, social welfare groups, these are groups that are organized not solely for political grounds. How much gray area is there right now in what they can and can't spend money on and whether they have to disclose things?
Well, they can spend money on politics, but their primary purpose is supposed to be, you know, sort of what's in their name, social welfare. So they're supposed to devote most of their efforts to that. They are required, when they file their annual tax returns, to tell the IRS how much they're spending on politics. So, you know, the agency can determine that they're not spending most of their efforts or their money on it. Both the WMC and the Wisconsin Club for Growth told the IRS they spent no money on politics in 2012. But I asked several professors and experts who study this sort of thing to take a look at one of their ads, and they told me, all of them, that that it definitely qualified as political activity and that they should have reported that spending to the IRS.
But is this one of those things where if my ad doesn't say vote for candidate X or vote against candidate Y, I can make a case that this is about an issue, this is education on something that's going to benefit the public? It is not, in fact, a political ad?
Yeah. These groups would definitely probably say that these are issue ads, but the definition is it's sort of different depending on who you're talking to. And at least under IRS rules, the way they define it, you don't have to say, you know, vote for Scott Walker or vote for Mary Burke to qualify. If you run it, you know, within a certain time period before the election, and if the ad does certain other things, you know, under their rules, it qualifies as political activity.
We'll go to a caller now at 800-642-1234. We have Kennedy on the line in Madison. Kennedy, hi.
Hi, yes. My question for your caller is just, you know, when does he see this stopping, that all this political money is going to, you know, determine elections, and that, you know, the people really no longer have a say in what is happening, you know, for their state or in the country?
Kennedy, thanks for the call. Theo, under the current state of affairs, do you see anything changing in terms of how much money is in the political system?
I think the only change that most people expect is for it to increase. At least at the federal level, far more money is being spent in 2014 than in 2010, the last time we had midterms. And I think, you know, almost all observers expect far more money to be spent in 2016 than was spent in 2012.
Now, a big issue in the story you're telling is one of disclosure. The groups you're talking about, and many like them, don't have to say who donated their money. There's wiggle room, evidently, on what they report as far as political spending. Talking to politicians, people involved in this story, did you get a sense that they feel like this is just the tip of the iceberg, what we found out about this particular case?
This is sort of a rare instance of, you know, being able to connect the dots. And it was only possible because of, you know, what that appeals court says was a fluke, accidentally posting this document that was supposed to be sealed. We almost never get a look at who is actually donating to these nonprofits that don't disclose their donors. There's really only a handful of instances in which we have. So it's very rare to even be able to understand at this level what is going on.
And you talked to lawmakers, some Democrats on the record, at least one Republican off the record, who expressed surprise at the amount of money put in by the mining company into these groups to influence this decision.
Yeah. I spoke to one Republican lawmaker who didn't want to be named, but who ultimately voted for the bill. And he said that he didn't think his colleagues were aware of the amount that GoGebic was spending, or that it was donating to this group, that it had given this $700,000, you know, until well after Scott Walker had signed this legislation into law.
Knowing what we know now with the dots that are connected, is anyone raising questions as to the legality of these donations and the political activity they went into?
To my knowledge, no one has raised sort of those flags. The John Doe investigation has focused, of course, on the sort of potential or possible coordination between the Walker campaign in 2012 and between these groups. But I think everyone expects it will be a long time before that fully plays out.
I know in the past you've reported on Citizens United and campaign spending. When these documents were released, what did that feel like? Was this a windfall for you to actually have some data to work with?
It is just an extremely rare look at being able to sort of unmask at least one of the donors behind an effort like this. Usually, you know, you're only able to unmask people like this when someone subpoenas, you know, bank records from a group like this, and that has happened very rarely.
And do you see any efforts underway to change the current state of affairs, to crack down on this sort of outside group spending with undisclosed donations?
The IRS is currently working on new rules that would spell out a little more clearly what these nonprofits are allowed to do, but those will definitely not be ready for this election cycle, obviously. And, you know, some lawyers I've talked to think that it won't be ready for even the 2016 elections, so that might be a long way off.
Theo, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Theodoric Meyer, reporting fellow at ProPublica. We've got a link to his story. In Wisconsin, dark money got a company what it wanted. You can find that link over at the Central Time Facebook page.